RTL Stories, the podcast with Lisa Burke from RTL Group.
Working in film is always a team work, a team effort. So all kinds of creatives put in their own perspectives as well. And I think when you can do that, manage to have all these different positions and in the same time stay true to the core source material, then you feel that there is a heart and a soul of authentic nature inside. And then you can be invited more naturally into believing a story. Yeah. And I think this is what happened with Maxton Hall.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RTL Stories, the podcast. I'm Lisa Burke, based here at RTL in Luxembourg. And in this series, we explore the lives of extraordinary people who have made RTL their career home, investigating what they do and how they got there. And today I'm joined by somebody whose storytelling has captivated millions across the globe. Ceylan Yıldırım is the executive producer and head writer of Maxton Hall, one of the most successful international series in the history of Prime Video. With a career that began in children's television in 1999, Ceylan has climbed the creative ladder from content writer to executive producer and even founded her own production company in 2016. And despite that milestone, she chose to join Ufa Fiction full-time in 2020, where she now leads major productions. Her journey is one of bold storytelling, cultural impact, and a deep commitment to representation. So welcome to the show, Ceylan.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
So let's start and think about that career evolution and some of your personal milestones. I know we can't cover all of them in about 20 to 30 minutes, but you started back in 1999 as a content writer. So thinking about that time, what helped you to develop that early creative voice, which was always intrinsic to your being, and how has that evolved over time?
I think like all of us, I was already in a young age, as a young girl, very interested in stories, listening to fairy tales, bedtime stories, watching television series later on. I started to have this kind of urge to create my own story. So I started really early on writing, first my own little fairy tales, and then later on kind of episodic ideas about the series I used to watch, and then mixed up different worlds of different shows, different characters and so on. So I really had fun doing this. But my first personal wake-up call came when I was 10. I went to the movies to watch this wonderful coming-of-age story, Stand By Me, by the recently tragically murdered Rob Reiner. I don't know if you heard about it.
Yes,
it's one of the most beautiful movies I've seen at that time, and this really was kind of my call for adventure. I loved the different perspectives that were shown in this movie, and I felt like I want to create something like that too. I want to be part of this kind of storytelling and journey of these characters, experiencing all different kinds of adventures. And so at the age of 10, actually, I started to think of how to get an entry into this industry. And my first thought was to become an actress. So I took my first acting lessons and my first steps on stage and had really fun with a young ensemble and performing live in interaction with an audience. But then I started questioning the pieces I was involved into, and luckily I was invited to work on them. So because of that, I rediscovered my love for writing and continued from that point on, wrote my own plays, and then I started to study film and television studies at the Freie Universität in Berlin. And got my first job as a content writer. And yeah, that's how it all started.
So really, you had that spark at a very young age, and the flame was lit at the age of 10. And then with a little dabble in acting, the other side of the screen. So you've seen it full circle, really. And then from junior producer to executive producer, I think a lot of us would love to learn about how you managed to climb that ladder, because it's a very competitive industry. How did you do it?
Oh, it is, but it was so the beginnings were really exciting for me because I got this job offer first as junior and then later producer at a beloved children's series, Schloss Einstein, which was produced at the great Babelsberg Studios, historic, traditional, one of the oldest large-scale movie studios, I guess, in the world, actually, with a long history of great productions that were done there, international feature films like the Bourne trilogy and Hunger Games, for example, were made, the Inglourious Basterds, and so it's really like an old traditioned studio. So I was excited when I was invited there for a job interview, and that's where I met Dieter Zaldecki, who was one of the creators of a very beloved children's show, which was kind of the German answer to the Sesame Street, Die Sendung mit der Maus. A very, very modern at that time approach, which the show holds with very diverse voices that were vocaled. And the same spirit he tried to translate to Schloss Einstein, which was a weekly serial drama for children with an educational aspect. And I was really like excited to get on this show. But then the interview turned in a different direction when I heard about the storylines that they planned. And one of them was about a Muslim boy who would come to school with a prayer rug and cause a lot of trouble and so. So I went into an argument with Dieter and was really upset about this. And I said I didn't want to perpetuate these kinds of stereotypes and cliches and so.
I think he was impressed
And
by this, though. He's impressed by your determination to get that message across to him, and you were not intimidated by his stature.
at that time, I thought, my God, I ruined all my chances here.
But
But
no.
really, no, he invited me to have a conversation with him about my perspective. And it was really an enlightening moment, I think, for the both of us. So he decided to take me under his wing a little bit and show me everything and taught me everything about the industry, which was, of course, a gift at that time. So I got the job. On the contrary, I was even invited to get the position as junior producer and later producer of the show, which I did for 7 years until I created my own first children's show, a real-time story about a hostage situation in a school.
Yeah, I mean, the stories are incredible and the storylines, and you can almost track your own life in parallel to all of these stories that you've created and worked on. And then in 2016, you did go on to found your own production company called Soul Park Pictures, which is for many people a huge milestone. But a few years later, you joined Ufa Fiction, and since then, you've led one of its most successful international productions. So, why that flip back to Ufa?
So at that time, founding my own production company was absolutely the right choice and a very exciting time in my life. So it gave me the opportunities to collaborate with different production companies, work on co-productions, get to know other colleagues in the branch. And it was really an exhilarating time with a wide range of opportunities and experiences. But in the same time, to ensure my income, I worked freelance as a producer, a dramaturgic consultant, and writer. So I developed on this level different projects too. And I was a single mom. So juggling all the everyday difficulties and tasks and obstacles in life put me at one point to make the decision on which topic to focus more. And since the writing was really like at that moment my core field where I felt the most home, I focused more on that. So I collaborated with great co-writers like Benjamin Gutsche, who was at that time working on a TNT dark comedy, Arthur's Law, which is now shown on HBO Max, I guess. And he invited me into his writer's room where we developed it together. And so, yeah, everything actually developed from there because there I got to know the CEO of that production company at that time, Natalie Kudiabor, which was a great and really fantastic collaboration. And she remembered me later on when she moved to Ufa. She is now one of the managing directors of UFA. And when Markus Brunnemann, another managing director of UFA, was looking for an executive producer to develop and oversee the production of best-selling novel, Save Me, Save You, Save Us, that they just got the rights for, she recommended me to him.
Well, you're also telling the important story of being a good person, being good at your work and developing that network through the course of your life. And if you work well and you have a, you know, good relationships with working colleagues, they remember you and they call you back. So that's a really lovely bit of information to share as well. UFA Fiction, it's known for very bold, very high quality productions. What sets UFA apart creatively and also culturally?
So my story with UFA was really, for me, a very exciting and exhilarating one because I got to know UFA during COVID time, so during the lockdown. I worked a lot remote, but got in touch with such a broad range of talented producer colleagues that are working under this roof. And of course, being in contact with Natalie, which was really like, our history is, I think, a showcase of how wonderful it is when women support each other. And I really knew that she would have my back. Then getting to know Markus, who was from the beginning giving me the benefit of the doubt and having my back in all kinds of different situations, was wonderful. So I had this kind of foundation of trust from the beginning, which I think is really crucial and essential for good work. And then UFA has this range and approach to have diversity in an authentic way set in their storytelling. They have serial dramas that are really successful in Germany where they imply these kinds of stories a lot. They are really pushing young creatives, young talents a lot and trying to get this kind of narratives, new approaches into the world. And this is something in this way I haven't experienced before. And I'm really grateful to be in that company.
Now, moving on to your creative vision and representation, which right from the top of this conversation, we realize it matters a lot to you. You spoke in your early career against stereotypical portrayals. When you think about that in the work that you do today and representation today, how do you think about that and put it into your own work when casting or developing characters?
First, I think it comes quite naturally because of my own background. So I have my own perspective, of course, on these kinds of stories because of my surroundings and my social circle. Then I think it's really crucial to show society as it is in all these kinds of different perspectives that we have. And since the industry until a short period of time before was led by a lot of, I would say, white male leads, it was more narrow. I think the need for these kinds of stories to break up and show more diverse perspectives is felt now and seen and heard. I'm really happy about that. So for me, it started with getting into the casting process more and see if, even if there's a German name, how can we get more diverse people into the cast, how we can open up the ensembles. And this was something actually that was already set at this very early time when I started at Schloss Einstein, at this children's series that I told you about. We had castings every year, 500, 600 young girls and boys to come and audition for the roles. And we took them from all different areas of life. And as I said, really try to get and look out of the box. And therefore, we had really diverse casts early on. So I tried to nurture this approach and it really functions very well.
And then, of course, Maxton Hall is a huge success. How do you balance commercial success with creativity and that creative integrity?
So I think you cannot plan commercial success in this way, how Maxton Hall turned out. Authenticity is really the core approach that I always have. The same thing as the diverse approach. I can only tell stories from my own perspective, from my own personal point of view. And I think this is what makes it authentic. I try to find in each story that I'm working on kind of the subtext that talks to me, to which I can relate to, and try to break down the narratives that are hidden inside. And then step by step, I can find a structure that relates to the original source material and build bridges between the two approaches. And this is what I did with Maxton Hall too. And of course, working in film is always a teamwork, a team effort. So all kinds of creatives put in their own perspectives as well. And I think when you can do that, manage to have all these different positions and in the same time stay true to the core source material, then you feel that there is a heart and a soul of authentic nature inside. And then you can be invited more naturally into believing a story. Yeah. And I think this is what happened with Maxton Hall. That's what people loved in it. Although, of course, it is set in a larger-than-life backdrop, which creates in the same time an escapistic field. And I think in the time that we are living in right now, people long for escaping the real life and their reality problems and issues. And so they love to dive into this world, into this kind of fairy tale backdrop, and especially with our wonderful young cast, with cinematography that is really beautifully done and the music. I think this got a pull that many, many people followed, and as we have seen, was a global success.
Absolutely. It's a global success, and it is escapism. It's beautiful escapism. But what makes it resonate so deeply, do you think, across so many cultures and languages?
First and foremost, I would say it is about the main theme with which many people across cultures and multiple languages can relate to. And this is the emotional impact and intensity that we experience during first love. And this is either when you are like our target audience between 14 and 29 in this phase, experiencing it either for the first time or in this intense way, or later on looking back and having a nostalgic feeling about it. This is something many people can relate to. And of course, then having tackled the trope of the From Enemies to Lovers story is something that creates a magical pull. People want to know how can two people from two such different worlds fall in love together and manage to survive this collision. And I think it has all the ingredients that audiences love, like inside of the struggle of love relationships, topics of identity, friendship, relationships with families, and so. So people can dive into this world, get lost in it, but in the same time, reflect and mirror a little bit of their own everyday life problems.
You have actually described love as a superpower, and I think it is one of those internal value systems. It's at the emotional core of your being and of so many of the stories that you choose to write about and to tell on screen. Tell us a little bit about that belief system for you and why you think it really can extend out to so many different story avenues.
I truly believe that it's one of the, if not the most powerful driving force in us human beings. So to look at it from this perspective, to look at stories from this perspective and discover them and explore them from there is really an eye-opening experience every time I do that, because either it is about how we approach love, it is something that shapes our character very early on, either by the way our parents teach us and bring us up, or by the lack of love that we experience. And this is something that is always kind of hidden in the background, but drives us through our lives and makes us act as the way we do with other people in life. And to analyze characters for behavioral reasons, where they come from, their psychological patterns, is something that I really love to do before starting a story. I think that's actually essential to our work as writers. And in the same time, focusing on love as a superpower and seeing how can the characters in their character arcs relate to this topic. What are they missing? What are they longing for? Or what drives them is something that many people, if not all, can somehow identify with subconsciously. And that makes them understand characters and heroes, heroines of the stories I want to tell. I totally believe that it works like that.
And did you take any creative risks with Maxton Hall? And if so, are you proud of them and why? Because it's always nice to kind of push the boundaries of your creativity and writing content.
I'm not quite sure if it's really a risk, but for us, it felt like that. If it's the right decision to follow the way of the best-selling novels by Mona Kasten, and my production partner, Markus Brunnemann, and I were really focused on staying as true as possible to the original source material, which has both perspectives of both main characters in them. And if this would be right to do it like that in the series as well, was a big topic. And we discussed a lot and finally decided to go this way because we didn't know if the audience would then maybe lose the closeness to their favorite character because they would understand the other side too, all of a sudden being invited to follow their thoughts and their emotions. But it turned out to be the right decision, and I'm really happy and proud about that and about the particular layer we added to the story, which was a philosophical, more metaphorical narrative voice that we gave them.
Well, you've been nominated for the Jupiter Awards, one of the biggest awards in Germany, from the audience, in fact, and you've been nominated in three categories. You must feel super proud. At the time of recording this, we don't yet have the conclusions, but just to be nominated is really quite significant in itself.
Accolades are always a great reward for the work that you're doing, of course, and just being nominated shows that people recognize how much love we are putting into the detail. Actually, everybody in the team is pouring their hearts into this project, so we are really, really happy about it, of course.
So then looking ahead, if we're just kind of summarizing your life in stories, what kinds of stories do you think are still missing from our screens? And what would you love to tell next?
I think we are growing what we are going through. So I, of course, in the matter of time, I got way more experiences in life, developed way more nuanced perspectives on life's topics. So in my early years, it was really important for me to tell these coming of age stories, since, as I said, it was one of my first callings to get into the business. But I think there are so many more interesting topics which can only be told by our own particular point of view. Everybody in this world is unique and everybody has their own unique way of telling stories. And if you feel the urge and the calling to get your ideas, your thoughts and your emotions out, then you should do it. And I think my particular creative voice will find its way and find the right stories to tell no matter what.
And then for somebody who's looking up to you and hearing this story, they're just starting out in the media industry today, which is fast changing. What would you say to somebody who doesn't see themselves represented on screens yet?
I would say that they should always follow their own heart and intuition and then create these kinds of stories that can only be told by their own perspective. As I said, this is like contributing to the authentic core that should be in each story. And I think authenticity is something that can be felt even if people having different opinions or different perspectives or perceptions on life because they're coming from a different background. To be able to get an invite into another perspective is the biggest gift that we can make. And therefore, they should not listen to other people that don't understand. If they feel and their intuition tells them this is the story I want to tell, they should follow that voice. That's 100% sure. And along the way, we all make mistakes, and these are parts of our path. So not to hold yourself back because of mistakes and backlashes is another crucial insight. Because I think when doubt kicks in and people think I did something wrong, they stop themselves. And this is really a pity. I've seen a lot of great talents dropping out of the business because of some little mistakes they've done. And I would always recommend to keep on going.
And then finally, over two decades in production, what excites you still about coming to work every day?
To live my dream, I think, is the most exciting thing I can do. And I hope everybody feels like that. So if you're really following your heart and pursuing your dreams till the end of your days, this is something that always makes you feel grateful and full of joy when you're starting the day. That's how it is for me. I can only talk from my perspective.
Well, we're very lucky to have you in your dream job, because through that, it shines and it radiates out through all of the work that you do and the successes that you've brought and the stories that you've told to the world that so many, many people enjoy. So congratulations to you and the team. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode. And of course, if you're part of RTL, please let us know your thoughts on the RTL group intranet in the comments section. And also, of course, you can get in touch on one of the social media channels. You just need to search for RTL Group on LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode very soon. Thank you for listening.